It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Monday, April 1st. I'm Erin Fulton with Raven News. The Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium is suing the United States for over $8 million it claims it is owed for indirect costs in 2016. The expenses were incurred by the tribal health care provider for billing third-party private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. District Court of Alaska on March 28th, the last day Search could litigate the eight-year-old dispute. It names the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the United States of America as co-defendants. In the suit, Search argues that the Indian Health Service failed to account for the indirect costs of managing third-party revenues when it reimbursed for expenses in 2016. Third-party revenues are the payments Search receives from private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. Although Search is primarily funded by the Indian Health Service under an agreement called the Alaska Tribal Health Compact, the lawsuit argues that the government is obligated to pay full contract support costs, and that, says Search, includes the expenses in billing third parties. Search's brief cites a number of U.S. Supreme Court rulings as justification for its claim, but the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the Indian Health Service, sees things differently. In a letter to Search, CEO Charles Clement last year rejecting the claim, the department wrote the IHS paid Search almost $59 million in 2016, including over $3 million for contract support costs and $17 million for indirect contract support costs. It states, nothing in the party's compact or funding agreement includes an agreement that contract support costs include any expenditures other than the amount identified in the compact. The department goes on to say that Search supplied no evidence or documentation that it is owed an additional $8 million for the costs it incurred through billing private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. Search is being represented by the Anchorage law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman. The Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has 60 days to reply to the suit. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Petersburg medical officials flew up two wilderness first aid instructors to teach locals how to help an injured person in the field. The trainees spent the first half of the day in the classroom learning how to treat everything from burns to hypothermia, but they spent the last half testing their knowledge in a simulated outdoor emergency. KFSK's Shelby Herbert has this story from the scene of the accident.
It's a clear spring day at Petersburg's sandy beach. Waves lazily lap at the shore and seagulls wheel around in the rare cloudless sky. And six volunteer victims are lying around, smeared with fake blood and bruises, and crying out in pain.
On a number of 1 to 10, what would you call that?
I mean, that's like an 8.
You're a tough man, Samuel.
Yes, right. I've been through worse.
I'd be calling it a 10 myself, so you're a tough man.
At a nearby pavilion, another group of trainees are preparing to jump in and rescue them. They huddle around a fire as their instructors explain the situation. The trainees were each out hiking with their best friend who slipped and fell off the trail. So now their job is to use what they learned in class to assess and treat their friend's wounds so they can get them to the hospital. All of the quote-unquote victims bear a particularly gruesome wound on one hand. A twig erupts from a flap of fake skin, mimicking a complete impalement. It's instructor Angela Henderson's handiwork. Her technique is pretty straightforward.
Lots of blood. It makes it look better.
The rescuers calmly walk into the chaotic scene on the beach to find their own wounded friend. Oscar season might be over, but some of the victims are giving the performance of a lifetime. Eddie Loyo is lying on the rocks, clutching his impaled hand to his chest, while his training partner, Kylie Watkins, assesses his condition. Loyo's contusions may be fake, but his discomfort is very real. He's curled up on the cold, wet ground, and a chilly wind cuts through his jacket. Watkins does her best to keep him comfortable with a sleeping pad and a blanket.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
Fine.
Oh, and now you're shivering. Because you're cold. All right, so I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to roll you over, and we're going to put this pad underneath you.
Yeah, I don't know how long I've been here.
Yeah, me either. And I have a beautiful blue blanket over here. Okay, here we go. Here's your beautiful blue blanket. Keep you nice and warm.
But you can tell they're both having a little fun with it.
I do take some medication.
What medication do you take?
For diabetes. What is it?
So wait, okay, this is the thing. He's my best friend. I'm not going to ask him his medical history because I'm going to know it.
You would ask anyway. It could have changed.
Loyo says he chose to spend half of his sunny Sunday in the classroom and then the other half lying on the ground covered in fake blood because he wants to help keep his community safe. He started working at one of Petersburg's canneries when he was 18, and he says he saw a lot of accidents throughout his time there. These days, Loyo's volunteering with the local fire department, where he's been exposed to even more danger.
Danger is everywhere. All these courses make you better for certain conditions, you know? It's really fun. It's really dynamic. I mean, having this group of people from varied paths of life, that's really cool.
And Loyo's right. Not all the wilderness first aid trainees here are first responders like him. Linda Slatt volunteers with the local Girl Scouts, Troop 4065. She says she's here because her scouts love to go camping, and she wants to help keep them safe out in the wild this summer.
And so this gives me a little bit extra knowledge to deal with the unexpected emergencies that might happen out there, you know, when we can't rely on EMS to get to us quickly.
There's one person in the class who's here for an entirely different reason. Wilderness First Aid is old hat for Aaron Hankins, director of Petersburg Fire and EMS, but he's not certified to teach it yet. That means Petersburg Medical Center and the Volunteer Fire Department had to fly up instructors from out of state.
I got a little bit more stuff to do on the instructor side, but it would allow me to teach wilderness first aid, and if all goes well, I'd be able to teach wilderness first responder as well.
As the class wraps up, instructor Angela Henderson offers up her top outdoor safety tips.
Be prepared to be out there. Know your weather, know where you're going, tell somebody you're gone.
And as the sun dips behind the mountains, the newly minted Wilderness First Aid certificate holders wipe off the fake blood, tear the sticks out of their hands, and head home. From Sandy Beach in Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
There is a new partnership to monitor Kodiak Island beaches for harmful algal blooms, which spread marine toxins like paralytic shellfish poisoning. As KMXT's Brian Venua reports, academic, federal, and tribal entities are working to better understand which waters are most susceptible to the toxins.
Paralytic shellfish poisoning is caused by a marine toxin that's spread by harmful algal blooms. Humans can contract PSP when they eat shellfish contaminated by the toxin, which can be fatal. It's become a bigger concern in recent decades, particularly in Kodiak. Right now, any shellfish harvested around the island needs to be sent to labs to test for toxins, which is mostly done off-island. Andy Wall is the environmental program supervisor for the Kodiak Area Native Association, which facilitates those tests.
You know, generally you go out with a bucket, you sacrifice 6 to 8 of those shellfish, you send them to us, we'll ship them off to Sitka, and we'll help interpret the results.
It's kind of a guessing game whether or not the places where people harvest shellfish will have low or high levels of toxins that cause PSP. But the Kodiak Area Native Association, Alaska Sea Grant, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have partnered to monitor various beaches for harmful algal blooms around Kodiak starting this year. NOAA has committed $1.5 million to pay for the testing and monitoring on land and even support some research offshore aboard the NOAA research vessel Oscar Dyson. The funding is expected to last for 5 years. David Kidwell is the director of the Competitive Research Program at NOAA's National Center for Coastal Ocean Science, which funds the research.
Alaska really is ground zero for a lot of the concerns we have around paralytic shellfish poisoning, harmful algal blooms, and that's in part due to the changing climate. We know that a lot of these species are moving further north than they used to be, but also the heavy reliance on subsistence use of those resources, the cultural significance of them, as well as just the vast shoreline.
In Kodiak, Ken as well says some of their test locations so far include Mission Beach, South Trident Basin, as well as several spots along the island's road system.
Our staff will be going out and collecting shellfish water quality and phytoplankton data from those locations. If anybody wants to submit samples outside of those locations, that's strongly encouraged.
Wall says the whole point of the project is to test areas where shellfish are harvested. Julie Matwiyu is a Marine Advisory Program agent in Kodiak for Alaska Sea Grant. She studied PSB and harmful algal blooms for years. She says locals have known about toxins in shellfish for a long time.
It's been around for a long time. There's written records back in the 1800s. The Inuktitut culture and practices have demonstrated that the way they handle shellfish, they knew about PSB.
Matwiyu says part of the problem with paralytic shellfish poisoning is that it can be unpredictable.
You can monitor one beach and it's highly toxic and go to the next beach and it might not be.
She says the monitoring project could make HABs more predictable soon, though. Part of the hope for the partnership is to create a forecast for harmful algal blooms to predict what areas will have high levels of toxins, but that's still years away. For now, the only way to ensure safety from subsistence harvests is by testing samples. Matwiyu says she hopes to have testing on Kodiak Island soon, but that will take some time too. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
As a disclaimer, KANA's Andy Wall is related to KMXT's engineering and program director, Mike Wall. I'm Aaron Fulton, and this has been Raven News.